king of sports books, comes the king of sports podcasts. Unleashed. Presented by BetMGM. Here's your host, Olivia Harlan Decker.
To Unleashed by BetMGM. I am very, very excited for today's episode. This is a real treat for me. A lot of you loyal listeners have heard me talk about my dad on here before. Some of our guests have even brought him up before I did. Jalen Rose called him the GOAT, which I wholeheartedly agree with. He's play-by-play announcer Kevin Harlan, and he is my co-host this week. Hi, Dad.
Hi, Livvy. How are you, sweetie? Good to see you.
I'm good.
I sound like a dad, don't I? I sound just like a dad. Hi, sweet. What's going on?
Yeah. No, and you're in Phoenix. You just finished up the Phoenix-Denver game. You're covering that series. So I want to just start there quickly before we get more into your story. But I mean, what a game. Two teams people are so excited about. You must be excited to be assigned this series.
I am. I thought this was one of the more electric series that took us to the second round. I'm a fan of both these coaches. I truly admire. Sometimes we get coaches, you're just kind of, but these are two guys that I respect so much, not only as basketball coaches, but as men, and how they lead, how they have changed cultures, live at two places that needed some revampment.
Yeah.
And they've taken superstar players, they've meshed them with role players, they've built benches, but they've built cultures, a winning culture, a culture of, work and teamwork and team first attitude. So yeah, it's been terrific. Chris Paul was great in game one. Mikal Bridges, over 20 points. Devin Booker did what he needed to do. And probably at the core of this series is the center matchup with Jokic for Denver and Ayton with Phoenix. And all Ayton has to do is basically stay step for step and not get in foul trouble guarding Jokic, which is a chore. And he did that last night, and they won handily. So if that's a precursor, this is going to be an interesting series. And I think Denver will certainly give him a shot, but Phoenix looks very good coming off their first series win off of the defending champion Lakers.
And hey, even bigger news for you personally is this was your first game in an arena in what, over a year?
Yeah, we had done the NCAA tournament for CBS and Turner in Indianapolis, but we were in a bubble. We were in arenas and off the floor. We were not traveling around. We stayed in one city. Yeah, this is kind of nice to get back out there. And they were very limited in attendance, only a couple thousand people at the NCAA tournament games, parents, family, friends, some school administrators. This is unleashed bedlam, 17,000 people in the building in full throat. And it was exciting and energizing and actually weird. I was working with Reggie Miller, and I said, it's odd to be seeing it with the naked eye because we've been doing games for so long off of monitors and you're hesitant when you do it off a monitor. But when you're there, you can have your quick Twitch call, and those are always fun. And last night was a blast to be back in a full theater.
I thought both you and Reggie sounded so great last night. You know, you take this for granted. You've been doing this however many years, and to get back in there, that had to be a lot of fun. And it was a lot of fun to watch. But man, those fans were electric, and deservedly so. Their team looked great. I want to go over quickly your bio for those who don't know. We've mentioned you do NBA on TNT, college basketball on CBS, NFL on CBS, Monday Night Football, and the Super Bowl on Westwood One. If you're of a certain age, for some of our viewers, you may know him best as the voice of NBA 2K, the video game. And you've made history as calling the most consecutive Super Bowls. The count is now up to 11, passing Jack Buck a couple years ago. That's impressive. And you also made history a couple years ago as part of the first father-daughter tandem to call an NFL game. We can talk more about that later. And something I'm very proud of you for, two-time National Sportscaster of the Year winner. That's voted on by your peers. And I know that has meant so much to you. Before we get much deeper in your story, what's something you're more excited about that's ahead of you? You've accomplished so much. What's like a benchmark or an award or some opportunity that you still want to accomplish?
You know, I'm pretty comfortable just trying to evolve in what I'm doing right now. It's mm-hmm. hard to maintain in this business, to keep the jobs at a certain address and to stay at a high level. And that's enough of a challenge for me. I think sometimes, and you and I have talked hour upon hour upon hour about, if you're looking too far ahead, you're not looking at what's right in front of you. So for me, the most important thing right now is game two coming up tomorrow night, Phoenix, between the Nuggets and the Suns. We all want to, you know, we all aspire to be the best we can be. But I think if we're looking at, I want to get to there, or I want to do this, or I want to have that, I think we're missing the message. In the successful people in this world mm-hmm. handle what's in front of them the best. And I strive to do that. So the challenge of just staying current and evolving mm-hmm. and making sure I get better every broadcast, that's enough for me right now. That's enough of a challenge. And then I've always felt, as I've again told you, and you've heard these ad nauseum, but if you're trying to please other people, if you're trying to look beyond and engage yourself on what others are doing, that's a fool's errand. You're never going to, that's a black hole you are never going to emerge from. So just be the best that you can be and let things happen the way they're naturally supposed to happen.
Now, it's hard to bring up your trajectory and your start in the business without bringing up your dad. And it's a question I get all the time. What's it like having a dad in the industry? You get it all the time, because especially people of an older generation know so much what your dad did with the Green Bay Packers and have such reverence for the importance of his role in that franchise. His dad, Bob Harlan, is my grandfather, Papa Boy. He was president and CEO of the Green Bay Packers for almost 20 years. Dad, just as you grew up, especially when I think back the furthest as like a ball boy at Green Bay Packers training camp, I mean, how much influence did that early access have on your career, and just kind of what you absorbed from watching your dad work?
Well, it shaped everything. It gave me a look behind the curtain. It showed me what professional sports was like. And I think if you're ever around it, you're molded by it and influenced by it. And I certainly was. So that portion, being in press boxes, being on NFL sidelines, my dad before that, as you know, your grandfather's with the baseball Cardinals in St. Louis, mm-hmm. when they had Bob Gibson and Roger Maris and Orlando Cepeda and Joe Torre and Lou Brock and Kurt Flood and all those magnificent, magnificent Cardinal players in the 60s. And I used to go down to training camp. I used to be a bat boy at Busch Stadium. I would sit in back of home plate and chart games, sat in the back of Jack Buck and Harry Carey's booth at Camo X broadcasting at Busch Stadium. So I got to see things that other kids didn't. And when you talk about having an advantage, I agree. I was exposed to things that most kids only dream about, and was so fortunate. And that's truly one of the only reasons why I am where I am right now, is that I began at a young age and my mind was directed in that portion of the business, in media, in broadcasting, and it did everything. The other part of it, Olivia, as I've told you, is watching my dad deal with people. He treated, as the CEO of the Packers, as the president of the Green Bay Packers, he treated the lowest employee as well as he treated the starting quarterback or the vice president or whoever he was dealing with. He treated everybody the same. Yeah. And when you watch someone act in everyday life like that, you can't help but be influenced by it. And I truly felt that that was a big component of his success, his rise. He always said, I'm not the smartest guy in the room, but dealing with people, listening to people, understanding them was a big part of his success. And so I've followed that. And I think you've taken after your grandfather too, because I worked with someone last night here in Phoenix who had worked with you on an ESPN game. And they said, your daughter is the only one who says thank you after every little thing that I would do.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And you've done bowl games out here in the Valley of the Sun. So they know you out here. They know you out here from your sideline work with ESPN. And, you know, it makes a father proud to hear those kind of stories. And you and I feel very fortunate we're in this business, blessed beyond measure.
Yeah.
And so when you hear those stories, you know, you feel like, let's treat others the way you want to be treated. And I saw my dad do that for a lifetime.
Absolutely. And then us as his grandchildren observing that too. And it's just very cool in any industry to watch someone who's at peak success and have peak humility. And I think he's always carried himself that way. And I was going to bring up that same story of it's such a small business. So yeah, if it's a cameraman, a graphics producer, audio tech, all the time people say, I've worked with your dad and man, is he the nicest? No one else stops to like remember names and ask about our kids and how we're doing. And I just have definitely watched you and Papa Boy do that. And that's huge. And really your legacy is unfinished. You know, no one knows what their legacy will be. I remember Oprah saying Maya Angelou told her that. And I think your legacy, just from what I've observed and as your only child in the industry and kind of gets to be in these circles, is I think your legacy will be kindness. I think that that is what ultimately you will be known for. Do you ever think of it like that?
Well, I think everybody strives to be kind. And
oh, I don't know. I don't think everyone does. I mean, it's because it's such a tough business. You're under so much stress. It's very time sensitive. Everything's live and you've done so much work. You've traveled there. You're doing the game. So much can go wrong at any moment. And unfortunately, not everyone does lead with kindness.
Well, it's hard because there's a lot of frustration and you're working around people in a very public business.
Yeah.
And mistakes are glaring and for all to see. No one sees sometimes a mistake made in an office cubicle.
Right.
No one sees a mistake made, you know, at home as you're cooking dinner, right? I mean, and those are simple examples, but this is a pretty, of course, you know, we know we signed up for. So, you know, there shouldn't be any, you know, challenge in understanding, well, why is this happening? You want to do and you want to treat people the way you want to be treated. I think we all know that saying, but to execute it when there's stress is very difficult. And there are times that it is stressful and someone has made a mistake or someone is wanting to talk when you've got, you know, a set amount of time to get something done, whether it's writing a lead for a story or trying to make sure you've got the information correct on a player and it's time sensitive. You don't have the time to spend with that person. So you remember that and you store it away. And hopefully the next time around, you can say, hey, I am so sorry. You caught me at a time when I had to get something done in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
You came by to say hi and I've thought about it and I slept on it. I feel bad about it. So I guess if there is ever that little speed bump where you can't be the person that you want to be, you go back and rectify it so you can be that person that you want to be. And I guess you feel like everybody around you wants to do the best job they can.
Right.
And everybody is trying hard. They don't want to make a mistake. They don't want to, you know, be imposing. You know, that's not their goal. They're just trying to help and trying to do the best that they can do. So you appreciate that fact of it. And I do love the business because there are characters and it's made up of people. Yeah. You can have all the bells and whistles you can, but at the end of the day, it's people punching buttons, making decisions, talking in your ear, at your side, on your, you know, it's all about people. So you and I have talked about this many, many times. And I think a little bit of kindness probably goes a long way.
Now you kind of brought this up. The business is changing. And when I got in versus when you got in, and it's just a different world. And you and I kind of disagree on this one topic. I love social media. I make it work for me. I think it's a great way to interact. I think it's a great way to share stuff. You recently got rid of your Twitter. I know you still have an Instagram, but I don't think you're ever on it because I've tagged you in a couple things. I don't think you see it. But my generation...
I don't know how to tag. I don't know how to say, yeah, hey, thanks for that.
For that tag.
I don't know what that means.
But I just think my generation is using it for us. And I don't think either way is right or wrong, but why do you think your approach is the way it is? And why do you kind of, you're more traditional in the sense?
Well, first of all, I only got Twitter because you girls thought it would be good for me to get on, but I never felt I had anything really important to say. And my main goal with Twitter has always been as a news feed, because by having an account, it allows you to get on and then follow the people that are reporters like yourself who have updates on stories, who may be breaking a story. So I use it strictly as a news feed. Vern Lundquist said something to me many years ago at a CBS NFL seminar. And he said, you know, I always thought I was pretty good. I always thought that I had kind of nailed a broadcast. I always kind of thought, you know, that I had gotten it. And then I got on Twitter and read what they were saying about me.
It's awful.
And I've never felt so low and so degraded and so deflated than reading comments by people who have nothing but comments to shoot out there with no accountability.
And this is one of the greatest to ever do it. And just one of the greatest men. Yeah.
One of the greatest and one of the kindest, warmest souls you'll ever come across. I can't tell you how much I respect him as a man and as a broadcaster. Mm-hmm. One of the legends in our business, Vern Lundquist. Mm-hmm. And when he said that to me, it shut off. So I purposely never look what they say about me. I don't want to know what they say about me. I've told people at both CBS and Turner, if something is said that is wrong, patently, blatantly wrong, then I guess I'd like to be notified of it. Like if they said, mm-hmm. I saw so-and-so punching out, so-and-so, right? Or I saw him doing something, or he said this. I mean, if it's blatantly wrong, then I would like to know about it.
Right.
And then I'll go through them and say, how can we handle this? Or should I handle it at all? But otherwise, I don't know what they say. I don't want to know what they say. I'll come home and your mom and my wife will say, well, people on Twitter like it.
We monitor it. We look.
Yeah, you do. You do. I don't want to.
Yeah.
I can't. And I guess, I don't know if that's a frail portion of my psyche.
No.
I'm not afraid of criticism. I love criticism because it's the only way. There's always a truth in every critical remark. There's always a vein of some kind of truth, even if it's outlandish. Mm-hmm. 5% may have a smidge of truth. It may be 100% the criticism is warranted. And you know what? I love that stuff. Bring it on. It's the only way you're going to get better. But I don't look at it because I'm afraid of what it will do. I don't want it to change the lane that I'm going in. And I'll be notified if I'm messing up. Mm-hmm. And I'll know that. And I trust my gut. But I also trust if my wife, your mom, she'll say, you might want to look at this. Or you might want to pare it back a little bit. Or you might want to whatever.
Yes.
And I trust her, intuitiveness in subjects like that. Now, that being said, I get what you do. I get it. And you should do it because everybody your age is doing it.
Yeah.
But not a lot of people my age are doing it. I don't know that Al Michaels has a Twitter. I don't know that Nance, or I don't know that the late Keith Jackson had a Twitter. I don't think any of them do. I think they follow it.
Yeah.
With what do you call that, fake name or whatever. but because they just want to get
on. You have one of those? Do you have a fake Twitter?
I do have one because you got to get on there to read the news feed. I want to read what Dave McMenamin or Winterst or any of these guys or Woj or any of these people, Shefty, what they have to say. That's the only way I can do it. So yeah, I came. You'll never guess what it is. I'll never tell. And I only use it.
What's it like, Jayhawk Boy with an I?
No, it's not. It is not. Actually, you might, if you dug enough, you might be able to figure
I can find it.
But I never post on it. I never say anything on it.
Yeah.
And I only use it so I can follow the reporters that I feel I've got to follow in the NFL and in the NBA.
Well, I used this crazy world of Twitter to get some good content when I asked everyone for questions for you. I said, my dad's coming on. If anyone wants me to ask him anything. And I got so many of aspiring broadcasters asking about your process. And I'm putting my own spin on this question because I know you have such a really steady voice process on the day of a game. You're a purist when it comes to voice performance. So what do you do on game day for your voice?
Well, I'm big into delivery. And unfortunately, you have heard that from me from the time that you were in high school.
Yeah.
And I apologize to that because I've beaten you over the head with delivery. It's all about delivery. What do I say? A well-delivered story with poor content is so much more effective than a great story poorly delivered. Yes, because all you're doing as a viewer or a listener is listening to the, and the stuttering and the trying to find the right word. But if you zip your way through a story and tell it in a compelling way, even if it's about grass growing, it's still a story that you remember. And I tell you that because it was the first thing when I was about 8 or 9 years old that got me into sports. The first thing that I can remember not just that my dad was in it. I loved being, you know, a part of my dad's spring training with the Cardinals and everything else. But I heard the great John Facenda of NFL Films narrate Super Bowl I between the Packers and the Chiefs. And it wasn't the play on the field and on the screen. It was the voice. It was the delivery. And when I heard that, something went off in my head. And then I began to listen for voices. And then I listened to Ray Scott, and I listened to Pat Summerall, and I listened to all Don Criqui and all and Jim Simpson and Keith Jackson and all these great voices of my youth that I still hear in my head. I hear voices in my head, and that's what I hear. That's what I listen. That's what got me into sports, and not into sports broadcasting, but into sports. Oh. And then that led to sports broadcasting. You say, wait a minute, these guys are broadcasters. And they're talking about these games I'm watching. So yeah, I'm big on delivery. And think about it 24/7. Think about it during the games I'm doing. And we'll have little things in my mind that I have felt in the past that I have said well, that I will do to get me back on track. It's not different than a singer, an opera singer, taking that little musical harmonica thing that they use to get a tone, whatever that's called. And to get the right tone and how they warm up before a performance. And I do that occasionally during my games. I've said some things that I know exactly how I said it to get me back to kind of ground zero to my foundation.
You're talking about the words that you write down?
Yeah. I won't get too deep in the weeds here, but I feel sometimes a game can get so frenetic that I got to reel myself back in. And so I have things that I have said that when I've listened back to my games that I said, oh, I like that little 5 second. I like the tonality and how I sounded. And so I'll hit my mute button and I'll turn my head because if I say it, you know, my partners will look at me and go, what are you doing? And I'll say something completely having nothing to do with where I am, but I use that to get my voice back to where I wanted to get to. So yeah, I'm big on performance. I'm big on pacing. I'm big on all those kinds of things and have used that as kind of my guide in my broadcasting career.
That's a great tip that broadcasters should write down and one I share a lot as well. We kind of have a little joke about the start of our careers because I technically beat you to the NBA by 1 year.
Yes, you did.
Now, your longevity and success, I'm sure, are far past what I'll end up accomplishing, but the groundwork was there. We both got our main big gig in the NBA, you with the Kansas City Kings, me with the Atlanta Hawks. You were just 22 years old when you got that job. At that time, did that feel like you had really made it? Like if that was as far as your career had gone, would that have felt like enough? Like that's what you wanted. That was such a great gig.
Well, I dreamt big when I was young in college and always felt like because I started in high school at our radio station at our high school in Green Bay, Wisconsin. So I knew I was on a faster path. It's not unlike a kid who learns to play golf when he's 3 and 4 years old. He's just probably going to be better when he's 15 or 16 than the other 15 or 16 year olds. And it just gave me kind of a head start. And you were kind of the same way. You began at such a young age, knew what you wanted to do. It benefited both of us in getting a start. The big difference was, if I go back and listen to 22-year-old me, and 21-year-old you sounds like they should have been on an NBA broadcast.
Oh my God.
22-year-old me sounds like I should have been in Paducah, Kentucky doing Paducah high school basketball. That was the difference.
That's not true.
But the business was different. And I got the job at the intersection of so many things happening. The guy that was doing the Kansas City Kings left to go to the Philadelphia 76ers. The Kansas City Kings were not long for Kansas City because they eventually moved to Sacramento. And I worked for a station that had the rights. I was producing the Chiefs pregame show on the radio network. I was doing segments on the station and on the Chiefs radio network as a college student. And so they saw me. I was young. I was cheap. And I was available. And that really led to that job. So it was by total luck and good fortune. You earned it because the Hawks saw what you were doing on Fox Sports with the Southeastern Conference football game sideline reports. And these guys, I know for a fact that Fox Sports were like, wait a minute, what's going on here? And the Hawks brought you on board, and it was the smartest thing they've done. And I was with one of the owners the other night who said, we miss Olivia Harlan so much. That was before you became Olivia Decker. Yeah, the business now is probably far more competitive than when I was breaking in.
Since when I got in,
oh my God, it's unbelievable.
I wouldn't go back to be 22 years old getting in the business for anything in the world right now. It's so intimidating.
No, I tell these kids, I say, as I told you, I say, you know, it may not happen as fast for you, but if you love the business, if you love what it takes to get better in the business, and you just drink in 24/7 everything about broadcast, how to be better, watching others, you know, using them as a roadmap, all these things. And if you enjoy the journey, this will be a fulfilling business for you. But if you're just in it to make money and trying to get to the next market and hopscotch and leapfrog and do all that stuff, you'll be left empty at the end of the day, because you'll never get to where you want to go. It's an endless string of disappointments. But if you love the business, and you and I love the business, it can be very fulfilling. And I just make sure that they've got the right compass heading when they jump in, because it can be frustrating and it can be degrading and it can be very, very disappointing.
Absolutely. It's as tough an industry as there is in terms of competition, paranoia, all of that. One thing I want to wrap up with is something that I feel like we don't talk a lot about in our family, because we know you don't like to talk about it. And I don't know why you keep doing it then. It's the goofy calls, the streaker, the cat, calling two games at once, the guy in the bra at the Super Bowl. And it's so what you're known for. And I hate saying that, because you do so much good, serious work, such great journalism, great play-by-play. But, you know, it's clickbait. It's funny. It's memorable. And we're going to bring on Peter Andrew later in the show, and we're going to play a little game, because he's brought up a bunch of your great calls. I've just got to ask, because this is one of the top questions I kept getting on Twitter, is what's going through your mind when these calls are happening? Because it sometimes I hear you and I'm just like, oh my gosh, what's he saying?
Well, clearly not much is going on in my mind, right? I mean, clearly we're cutting to the lowest common denominator. But
no.
The only technical way I can explain it, I mean, you never go into it planning, okay, you know, like if a squirrel runs out on the field, or if a, you know, fat, you know, naked guy is out there doing somersaults, what am I going to say? You know, like you never think of that. But here's what it is. When I'm doing these games, and you know this because you go through the same process, I am so lost in the game. Like I am so into every detail of the game. And when you get lost in something and you're so immersed in it that you are just reacting to the next thing that happens, and you almost do it kind of in an out of body subconscious way, like you're not thinking about really what you're even saying.
Yeah.
And the things that people remember I've done on radio, on NFL radio broadcasts, and we were doing radio, you are looking for every detail on the field. You know, you're looking at the color of the sky. You're looking at the wind and what it's doing to a hot dog wrapper that's blowing across the field. And you're watching the quarterback, you know, wipe the sweat from his brow, or the eye black that's beginning to run under his eye. Like you're trying to paint this unbelievable picture, because you want to give the listener everything that the viewer is seeing. So when these things have happened, whether it's been a cat on the field or a couple of drunk guys rolling across the field, I'm doing it in the context, because, by the way, both drunk guys ran right through the formation as the ball is getting ready to be snapped and the play is going to be run.
Yeah.
And so you just pick it up here now, second down and 10. Wait a minute. A guy has run right through the, you know, so it's all a part of what I'm seeing. And I guess I forget for a time what's going on. Now, the other night we were doing a game with Philadelphia in Washington, and a guy, it was on TV, it was on TNT, and a guy ran on the floor.
I swear it's always your games when this happens, though.
I think it happens, but being on television, you don't want to, you know, give him any kind of notoriety, so they turn the cameras away. On radio, you don't see the guy. Yeah. You don't know his name. It's just a guy. So there's a little bit of anonymity there that really doesn't get us in trouble. on television, it would, because if he showed the face, the guy's getting exactly what he wants. He's getting that 15 seconds of fame. So we don't show it. And we just said a security guy makes the tackle and they're going to take him off. And that's what happened. So it really is a byproduct of losing myself in the game and being so into it. And that's kind of where some of those weird calls come in, you know, when a guy has a big dunk or he hits a big shot and we go crazy. You're so into the game that you kind of sometimes lose your bearings and you got to quickly, you know, reclaim them, because you got to realize, hey, you know, I'm a reporter here and I better bring it back in a little bit. And you do. But that kind of is it. It's very simple. It's like the stone cutter who's got a chisel and knock a stone that's in the middle of a road, right? And he's hitting that stone once and 10 times and 20 times and 30 times and pounding away and trying to crack that rock in two. And on the 400th crack of that rock, it finally splits, right? It finally splits in half. And a guy walks in and sees this final hammer of that rock that splits on the 400th take. And he goes, wow, you must have really taken a wallop on that hit. And he goes, no.
Yeah.
It wasn't the 400th hit. It was the 399 before it that led to the 400th. And that's kind of what play-by-play is all about. Mm-hmm. Here's a 2-yard gain. Here's a 4-yard gain. Here's a little layup. You know, it's the little plays, but it's every play that lead up to the big play. And that's the best way I can explain it.
Well, I've never heard you describe it like that, but I know you hate becoming the story. And it's always after something like that happens, and it's like Kevin Harlan's call of the cat on the field, whatever it is. And I know you get so shy. You never want to be the story. You never want attention. But I will tell you, as your daughter and also someone in the business, I think when you show that kind of levity, it's really refreshing. And you're so funny. We know how funny you are at home, but you're so serious about your work. And I like when you do that, because I think it shows that you take the work seriously, but you don't take yourself too seriously. So again, I just want to commend you on those moments, because not only are they great viral social media moments that people are just like, Kevin Harlan's a national treasure. I see that tweet more than anything. But I appreciate that you're able to switch into a kind of a fun place, and you're very, very good at that.
Thank you, sweetie. That's nice of you to say.
But I look forward. We're going to bring in Peter Andrew, who has told me he's a big fan of yours, and we're going to play a little game and see if I know some of your most famous calls. So I could ask you a million more questions about your career.
And I'll be disappointed if you do. If you do know him, I'm going to be very disappointed in you, because you should be doing something much more constructive with your time. Doing something. I don't want that feeling in your head. You got a long way to go in this business.
Oh, man. Well, thanks so much, Dad. And with that, let's go to Peter Andrew. Well, now is the segment in our show where we help you look a little smarter, have better conversations with your friends as you're watching all these exciting games, and help you maybe put some cash in your wallet. Peter Andrew from BetMGM joins us now. Peter, how are you?
Hey, how's it going, Olivia?
We are good. And you've got double Harlan duty today. So we can't wait to go over some of the prop bets, series bets, star player bets, everything. But this is such a fun time of year to be talking with you. And I remember last week, you were saying kind of a fun, crazy bet that was interesting. And I want to start with this one. You said Trae Young for finals MVP. He had 35 the other night. I believe he was plus 6,600 last week when we talked. That's now down to 2,500. What are you seeing in Trae Young?
Yeah, I mean, crazy to think. It was a really solid game one.
Wow.
But they have a shot. I mean, if they play well and they play team basketball and Trae Young does Trae Young things, I mean, you're going to see that number continue to go down. Yeah. We're recording ahead of game two, but massive game. Let's see what happens. You know, I've been high on the Sixers, but if they play the way they've been playing against the Knicks and now Philly, I mean, he's got a legitimate shot, and no one else is going to win finals MVP if they end up going all the way.
From that team. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. But about three quarters of their game in Philly, they let their foot off the gas there a little bit.
Yeah. They got some work to do for sure for game two tonight.
Yeah. Dad, have you seen the Hawks much this year?
I have not. You know, I've enjoyed Trae over his career at Oklahoma, as short as it was, and his short time in the NBA. And I was with someone actually the other night who was in the room when the Atlanta Hawks were deciding about Doncic or Trae. And it was interesting because they saw Curry in that kind of frame in what Trey presented, but they love the size of Doncic. And that trade is going to go down in history, I think, is one of the more analyzed trades in the history of pro basketball, kind of like the Philip Rivers, Eli Manning deal between the Giants and the then San Diego Chargers. Who would be better? Who was destined for the Hall of Fame? We know one guy won a couple Super Bowl MVPs. The other guy put up historic numbers. It could be that way with Trey and with Luka as well. I think they're both getting marvelous careers, different frames, different styles, but both electrifying players, and they're going to be fun to watch for years.
That's a good story. I like that. Sticking in the East a little bit, Peter, James Harden's injury now, I believe he is officially ruled out for the next game. How much will that affect Brooklyn and some of the lines you're seeing?
Yeah, yesterday was a little crazy. When the news came out that Harden was out for the game, they were down to -2, and they actually went to +2, the Nets, which was crazy.
Yeah.
And then they obviously, they blew out Milwaukee. So I think there was a lot of money unevenly going back and forth, but it seems like it doesn't matter. This team is just so well-oiled. I mean, KD at any given moment can go for 35, 40. Kyrie didn't have a particularly amazing game, and they still just ran the show. And you have great shooters. Blake Griffin looks like Blake Griffin from 5 years ago.
Yeah, what happened?
Someone made the joke that they cryogenically froze him in Detroit for the last couple of years, and now he's back and better than ever. So if you have those guys playing like that, I mean, it's so hard to bet against them. And I know I've been trying to go against the bandwagon a little bit just for some value perspective, but
sure.
But they are a good, good team.
Dad, you see this a lot with players. You know, people had written off Blake Griffin. He's what, 32 years old. He's not too old by basketball standards. He definitely has some years ahead of him. But when you have this kind of revival of a better surrounding cast, a lot of hope in the city, a lot to play for, and a chance to win this title finally. I mean, what other like player does this remind you of, this kind of trajectory in any sport, of when you see someone kind of come back to life?
Well, you said it, Liv, because he has had kind of a resurgence here late, and he's not the guy. He doesn't have to be the guy, and he's playing with a better supporting cast. He really didn't have that with the Clippers, certainly hasn't had that with the Pistons. And I think that he senses, as you were alluding to, that window is shutting. He's had a history of injuries. This has been a stroke of good fortune in his career that he's able to finish like that with these players. But when you don't have to be the guy, when you don't have to be the target on your back, everything comes easier. You move easier within the offense. It's easier to defend because your assignment is easier. The pressure is off. Plus, he's at a stage in his career where people know his name. He's an all-star. He's a gifted player, but he clearly has things on his resume he needs to fill. So when you have a motivated player at this stage, not playing for money nor fame, but just playing as part of a better overall story, you get things like this. I'm trying to think if I can, I mean, you could probably mention some examples of guys that have been like this, that have gone to other teams. We've seen it before. Andre Iguodala, I guess, is maybe an example too. When he only played a year in Denver after a lot of years in Philadelphia, goes to Golden State. He eventually became the finals MVP, but he wasn't the guy. In Denver, he was the guy. In Philly, he was the guy. But at Golden State, he just had to fill a role, be a defensive player, be the consummate team guy, come off the bench, willingly accept that role. He did, and it led to an ease of play, the best, certainly, stint of his career, and a championship, and a finals MVP. So you've got stories like this littered throughout sports, but there is a mentality that follows that, and we're seeing it play out right now at Blake Griffin and the Nets.
Absolutely. We were talking about Kevin Durant earlier. He leads the pack right now for finals MVP favorites. I believe he's at +150. And Sam and I were watching that game the other night, and he said Kevin Durant is his favorite player to watch play right now. He said he cannot believe what he's witnessing. Do you feel in that same vein, Peter?
Yeah, it was funny yesterday. I think one of the announcers asked 2 years ago when he had that injury. I think it was 2 years ago, almost to the date.
Wow.
Did he think he could come back the way he did? He kind of laughed at it and was like, well, of course I thought so. But
to be fair, that wasn't a great question.
It wasn't.
That was very awkward.
It was super awkward. And
he said, are you serious? Yeah. Is that a real question?
I was kind of cringing and laughing at the same time, but
right.
KD's always known it, but we really know it now. I mean,
yeah,
he has come back and he's playing that same type of basketball. I mean, mid-range is on point. He's distributing the basketball when he needs to. I mean, he's playing defense. He just looks like the guy that we expect him to be. Again, it's, you know, we're throwing a little bit of money on some of these other players, a Paul George, a Trae Young to win finals MVP. But I mean, every road leads to Kevin Durant, especially with Harden being a little bit banged up. Kevin Durant is going to be the guy they rely on down the stretch. It's hard to go against it.
Absolutely. You said last week, the West is wide open. What are you thinking now that we're getting into some of these games?
Yeah. I mean, yesterday was kind of a shock to me, but I had mentioned one of my bets to you was around the lines of Devin Booker to be the high scorer in the round.
Yeah.
The Phoenix Suns are a great team. Denver, I think, still a little bit iffy. I mean, we know how good Jokic is, but their backcourt is, it's a cause for concern. I like Devin Booker to kind of take control of the series. I know he shot a bit more, I don't know if cautious is the right word, but a bit more efficient yesterday. But I really like the Suns. I'm still really intrigued on what the Clippers could potentially do in the series against Utah that starts tonight. Those are probably my two teams that I see going into the conference finals. But it really is wide open. All four teams played superb basketball throughout the playoffs, but certainly throughout the year. And then on, you know, on that series with the Clippers, there's a couple of unique bets we have. And I really like this bet of most points within the series. Mm-hmm. Paul George plus 850, I think it is. I mean, why not take a flyer on him to have a great series? There's going to be a lot of pressure on Kawhi.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of focus defensively on Kawhi. PG can have a couple really decent games. And at that odds and that price, you can find yourself making a couple bucks.
Well, let's ask the guy who was at the game last night. Dad, you're covering the Phoenix-Denver series. What did you think from maybe shot selection, especially with Devin Booker?
You know, I think Booker was just kind of feeling his way last night because other guys were hot. You know, I always try to get a handle on what the best players, the leaders on teams do early. And Booker and Chris Paul are in that category. But Bridges was great. Mm-hmm. Ayton did not get in foul trouble. He was great. He's been terrific. In fact, I would dare say that the Suns will go as far as Ayton goes. Mm-hmm. If he stays out of foul trouble and can control Jokic with his defense, as he's done in previous meetings, and stay even just toe-to-toe, not even supersede what Jokic is doing. If he can just stay on pace with Jokic, I think there's no doubt that Phoenix is going to be favored to win this series. They're favored going in right now, and Peter probably has alluded to this in the past, but last night confirmed a lot of things. Now, they got an otherworldly performance from Mikal Bridges, and then the last two games, something has happened that I think has really kind of gone under the radar. In game six that we did, Lakers, Phoenix in Los Angeles, Chris Paul came in the fourth quarter of that game six, and the Lakers were creeping back, and they got to within single digits after being down by 20 plus points. And Paul came in, scored seven quick points, dished a couple passes, got the pace back up, took control on the floor, and they were off and running and sealed the win in the series. Last night, same thing, comes in the fourth quarter, because sometimes, and Olivia used this term, they took their foot off the gas. It's a perfect term, and they did, and it's very natural. It's human nature when you have the lead and you're in control to exhale. Mm-hmm. And the Suns barely did that last night, but then Paul comes in the fourth quarter. See, that's the difference between a championship team and a team that is just treading water. And the Suns have the markings because Paul knows when to say when. He knows when to grab the game by a throat and squeeze. He did it game six to close out the defending champs. He did it last night, game one, when the Nuggets were creeping back in the game, chiseling their way to get back in there, and he took that game over. So Booker, who can score when they need him, and they felt they needed that push in game six, they thought they needed kind of a turbo boost early in that game on the road. They knew the Lakers would be jazzed. They were starting Anthony Davis. It only lasted a couple minutes. But Booker was aggressive. Last night, picking and poking and kind of working his way. And what did the team need? They didn't need him last night. They will, but last night was not one of those games. The others filled in perfectly. That's what you want to see from your team.
And that is the beauty of playoffs. Different guy, different night, different lineups. And that is why we love watching.
You know that. Exactly. You've covered them.
Absolutely. Well, that was a great playoff catch up and preview, but now we have a little game to play. And Peter, this is going to be a lot of fun. My dad has no idea what's going on, let me just say. So Peter, explain the rules.
Well, and this I'm looking at the instructions don't say there's nothing about this. What are you talking about? A game?
Yeah.
I thought we're just going to talk hoops here.
No. Peter, you tell him.
Peter, is this, are you up to this, Peter? Was this your idea to do this here?
This is a little bit of a little bit of half and half with me and Olivia.
Okay.
So this started, I admittedly am a big fan of yours, and you are known for a lot of fantastic quotes through NBA, but across a couple of different sports as well. So what Olivia thought would be good, and myself, I'm going to name a quote. I'm going to skip out the player or whatever it's directly pertaining to. Olivia is going to take the first stab at it and see if she gets it. And then if she doesn't, we're going to dish it off to you and see if you know it. So I have five NBA focused questions. And then I have two that are kind of a little bit more off topic from NBA, but we'll go through each of them.
Okay. And I'm going to give you a little preview. I do not know these as well as I should. And this goes back to when I'd be in school or something and my teachers would say, what games your dad have this weekend? Where's your dad? I would never know because my dad never brings work home. So I don't know as much as I should. And I'm already embarrassed. I'm not going to know a lot of these calls, but they are legendary and people have brought them to my attention. So I'll try my hardest.
And I did crowdsource a couple of them with some colleagues too. So they're not totally out of the blue, but I think these will be fun.
Okay.
So the first one, when you're aerodynamically designed with that hairdo, you can do those things.
Oh gosh. No idea. I'm waving the white flag early. Dad?
Well, that was the Birdman in Miami against Milwaukee in a playoff game. And he had the spiked hair and the heavily tatted arms, the sleeves. He had it up through to the jawline. He was painted all over. And piercings, I mean, like, it was like everything. Like, it was everything you can imagine. But the guy was an energizer. He was a Rodman-like player. And he was literally flying all over the place and waving his arms and trying to get the crowd. I mean, like he was leaping and hanging and driving and scoring and rebounding and feeding and blocking. I mean, like he's doing everything. And, you know, when a guy takes over a game like that, I kind of lose my mind. Unfortunately, it's a shock. They still will continue to employ me because stuff like that just kind of comes up. But I love the game and I love players like that that are unique. And he is unique. And on that particular Miami team, he was terrific and really filled a niche, which you don't find a lot in the NBA, but that was the Birdman for the Miami Heat. Am I right, Peter, against Milwaukee in a playoff game?
You are correct.
I think that was it.
You are correct. And
okay.
It's calls like that that as fans energize us too. So I have a ton of friends that if they know you're calling the game, they'll all tune in. So it's...
You're watching insanity at play is what you're watching. You said, here we have a guy cracking up on the air. Let's watch here because we all want to see the car wreck, right? There it is right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There it is. Oh, that's amazing. All right, Olivia, number two here. So he goes, player's name. And then we just saw a man fly. Ride him, cowboy. What a play.
Oh, this, I know I've heard it. We just saw a man fly. Is it LeBron?
Nope.
Give me a hint.
Denver Nuggets.
We just saw a man fly, Denver. I don't know.
Big dunk.
Carmelo?
Nope.
No. Okay. What is it?
Kevin?
Well, that was J.R. Smith.
Okay.
I think it was like a mid-season, like, oh my God, let's get rid of the regular season. Let's get to the playoffs type of game. We were in Denver, and he took off in and around the free throw line. And kind of out of no place, exploded. You know, he's kind of sneaky athletic. We think of him with threes. And JR is gifted, you know, certainly athletically. But he took it. And it was a two-handed dunk, as I recall, Peter. And took it high and hard and came down. And the bench, you know, you kind of get sometimes as a broadcaster, you kind of watch the reaction of the bench. Because those guys see it 24/7. They know the guy, know his game, know what he can do or can't do. And when the bench exploded, that's usually a pretty good sign that maybe you should explode too. And again, I think it was against the Spurs, maybe. Was it against the San Antonio Spurs?
I think that's right.
And he came up with just kind of an iconic mid-season, February in Denver, regular season dunk. That's all it was. I must have been bored. I'm sure I was bored.
Okay, I'm 0 for 2. We gotta get this better, Peter. What's your third? Need redemption.
Third one, this is a tough one, I think, but I'll give you a hint after if you need it. Flight 9 is cleared for landing, and the 9, I'll give you the hint, the 9 is referencing the player's number.
Number.
And another hint, I've already said his name in the last 10 or 15 minutes.
That you did.
Shows how good attention I'm paying.
Finals MVP was the reference.
Olivia, I would be disappointed as your father if you knew these. I'm so glad you don't. This is the last thing you need to be worried about. This is stuff that fills your brain that should not be in your head. So I'm glad you don't know.
Was it recent?
No.
I don't know. Tell me.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Well, Peter, was it a playoff game? Am I right? Or was it just a game?
No, I think it was.
I think it was a playoff game against Chicago in Chicago. Well, it could have been in Philly because it probably got zipped up by the stands. That was Andre Iguodala.
Okay.
And he had come in with another, you know, skywalking type of dunk that he would do from time to time. He did more of it as a young player with the Sixers than he's done it certainly as he's aged. But he came in with a pretty good dunk. And flight nine, you're cleared for landing or whatever.
That's really good. That's a great line.
Oh, no.
I think my living room shook when that happened right along the baseline. That was a good one.
Well, I think we better wrap up. But Peter, just since I know you do have a list in front of you, what would you say is your favorite of the calls?
Okay, so the J.R. Smith one is iconic. And me and my brother always talk about it. I'll give one last one, okay, which is kind of one of the funny ones. And I need you to guess a part of this.
Okay.
It's so ridiculous.
So he's embarrassed to even repeat it.
This is at an Ole Miss, I want to say an Ole Miss game, college game.
Oh, wow. That's way back.
So he goes, Kevin goes, here goes baby name. She's on top with those wonderful, oh, look at her move. And she accelerates and takes it for the win. It's a baby going across the half court line, one of those little halftime shows.
And
the baby crosses the line to the other parent and wins. What is the baby's name? And again, it's so ridiculous, but it is iconic that everybody knows it.
Dad, do you remember the baby's name?
I do, because it was during a commercial. It was not live on the air. It was during a commercial.
What was it?
And we were just, again, it was probably a blowout and we were trying to amuse ourselves. And I think I was working with Bill Raftery, and they had this baby crawling contest at halftime. And we were sitting there watching it, and the crowd was into it, and we started calling the play-by-play of it. I will tell you, I'll give you a hint, Olivia. The baby's name was one of your sister's names.
Abigail.
Yeah, it was. Good. You're right. And why? I do not know.
Well, that is a good place to wrap. That's a funny one, and one I've never heard before. I've never heard that story. So that's really good. Peter, great research.
Yeah, we might have to have a part two because I got a couple other funny ones.
I would love to do a part two. I would love to have my dad back on here because having the two of you.
Peter, you're a rascal. I can tell right now, Peter's a rascal. I'm going to have to be leery next time I come on with him. If there is a next time.
Oh, there will be.
Okay, good.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you both for joining me today. I really enjoyed that segment.
A lot of fun.
Thanks, guys.
Well, that was a lot of fun. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening. And remember, for all future episodes, just listen wherever you find podcasts, rate and review, and make sure you stick around with us because we're having a lot of fun, have a lot of cool guests coming up. So, Dad, if anyone wanted to keep up with BetMGM content, where would they go?
Well, first of all, don't follow me. Follow at BetMGM. That's what I do.
You got it. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. See you next week.